brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 042-87-2013. Here's a little update on the Cannabis Bee News. I've got a helper to help me do some of the legwork to getting the episodes ready, so I'll be doing 3 episodes a week. I'll be doing one Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Looks like I'll be breaking them up into general cannabis and marijuana, medical marijuana, and hemp. Just have each day a different theme of the show. So keep your eye out for more episodes. All right, let's roll into article number 1. Marijuana poll. Report use remains stable while support for legalization grows. Take it away.
Marijuana poll. Reported use remains stable while support for legalization grows. By Nick Ling. The Huffington Post. Support for legalizing marijuana for recreational and medical use is growing nationwide, but a recent Gallup survey found that this shift hasn't correlated with an increase in reported use of the drug. In a poll of 972 national adults conducted in July, 38% reported having tried marijuana, a small increase from 34% in 1999 and 33% in 1985. The poll had a margin of error 4 percentage points. Among the respondents, 7% admitted currently using marijuana. 13% of liberals reported currently using marijuana and 49% said they'd tried it at some point. Among conservatives, only 2% said they currently use marijuana and 32% admitted having used it in the past. Earlier this year, support for marijuana legalization reached a high point when polls showed a majority of Americans were in favor of turning away from federal law, which currently considers the drug a Schedule I controlled substance, alongside heroin, PCP and LSD. Weeks after a Pew Research Center survey found 52% of Americans in favor of legalizing marijuana use, a HuffPost YouGov poll found that 51% believed marijuana should be legalized, taxed, and regulated like alcohol. In both of those surveys, around 10% of respondents said they'd used marijuana in the past year. Polls have shown even broader support for legal medical marijuana. In a Fox News poll released in May, 85% of respondents said they favored allowing marijuana use if it was prescribed by a physician. The surge in support for legalizing marijuana and the relatively stable reported use comes as states continue to make strides in reforming pot policy. Voters in Colorado and Washington state both passed laws legalizing marijuana for recreational use last year. Last week, Illinois joined 19 other states and Washington, D.C., in legalizing marijuana for medical use.
Article number 2. Behind the legal marijuana boom in California. Take it away.
Behind the legal marijuana boom in California. Source minus 3 News. Should New Zealand legalize pot for medicinal use? Across the Pacific, there's a billion-dollar industry growing in California, and it's all legal. Third-degree reporter Sarah Hall takes a peek inside the pot shops of Los Angeles and meets up with Cheryl Schumann, the Martha Stewart of marijuana making millions from the cannabis boom. Driving through the manicured streets of Beverly Hills, Cheryl Schumann looks every inch the Hollywood wife. She's blonde, glamorous and even has the Ferrari to match. But there is more to Ms. Schumann than meets the eye. She is a ganjapreneur, one of a growing number of Americans making their millions out of marijuana. It's just like the dot-com boom from years ago, she says. This is the pot-com boom, the green rush. Everyone is rushing in to get their position. Those in first will be the billionaires of this industry. In California, cannabis has gone mainstream. It was legalized for medical patients in 1996. Nearly 20 years on, pretty much anyone can get a prescription. Now 17 states, or more than a third of the United States, have followed suit legalizing medical marijuana. Suddenly there's serious cash to be made. So how did Ms. Schumann become a cannabis queen? Like many Americans, she is a master of reinvention, growing up dirt poor on an Appalachian tobacco farm so poor she featured on a story about the country's most impoverished families. But she was determined to claw her way out of poverty, making her first million in her 20s by clipping coupons. A few years ago, her glamorous life came to an abrupt end when she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. To help with the nausea and pain, a friend suggested she smoke cannabis. To her surprise, not only did Ms. Schumann come off her medication, her cancer disappeared. You learn when you get sick how precious time is. Cannabis gave me my life back, and every single minute I have I feel it's my duty and obligation to the plant, to the community and people in general to let them know what is possible. Using cannabis saved my life, she says. While it's absolutely medically unproven Ms. Schumann's cancer went into remission because of cannabis, she's become the poster girl for legalizing cannabis in the United States. While not everyone will agree with my philosophies or what I do for a living, they can't deny that cannabis is here. People are interested. It's a hot topic, and I think by having a mainstream face for it, the girl next door. I could be your mom, aunt, sister or teacher, and it allows people to listen to me. The mainstream face has allowed Ms. Schumann to successfully launch her cannabis business. She sells everything from vaporizers to pipes. She has a magazine that turns over millions a year. Even Hollywood has come knocking wanting to make a reality series about her life. Coming from New Zealand, it seems odd to us, but Ms. Schumann is on a daytime talk show espousing the benefits of cannabis and showing off some of her cannabis-related products. She has taken her love of cannabis further than most. Not only is she making millions off the herb, she's the president of the Beverly Hills Cannabis Club. Members get together for all sorts of things, including cannabis tastings. The club regularly gets together for cannabis dinner parties, even hiring an executive chef for the occasions. One of the best things about legalization, according to American users, is the quality control and the explosion of different varieties. The scientists have gone to town and created hybrids of varying strengths. You just have to tell your local pharmacist what you're after. Clearly, it's a fine time to be in the cannabis industry. The ganjapreneurs are making everything from candy to cookies to chocolate, tea, honey and even olive oil. The owner of one establishment, Sam Humide, says edibles enable users to measure exactly how much they're taking, advice he should have taken himself. There are as many as 1,000 pot shops like Mr. Humide's all over the city, but legalization hasn't been all smooth sailing. While there is plenty of science proving marijuana helps with numerous ailments, the law has become a laughingstock because of the ease of getting a doctor's prescription. On Venice Beach, so-called green doctors are set up every few hundred meters touting for business. The mayor of Orange County, Bruce Broadwater, has been waging a war against the shops, successfully closing down hundreds of dispensaries in his area. Marijuana is still a legal battleground in the United States, but it may just be one Beverly Hills marijuana mom who manages to successfully rebrand the drug once known as the devil's weed. Ms. Schumann believes its use is becoming more and more legitimate, and legalization is the only way the US and New Zealand should go. There have been studies all over the world, Portugal etc., that show regulating cannabis is more effective at keeping cannabis out of your children's hands. It works. Regulation works. It's proven, she says. 52% of Americans favor widespread legalization. Both Colorado and Washington states have done just that, and legalized it for anyone over 18. Some believe the genie has escaped the bottle and marijuana will soon be legal in more states than not, providing endless opportunities for savvy people like Ms. Schumann. She says she's not just smoking grass, she's making hay while the sun shines.
Article number 3. This hyper-cool electric scooter is made of hemp and glue. Take it away.
This hyper-cool electric scooter is made of hemp and glue. By Joseph Flaherty. Source, Wired. At first glance, the BA scooter, invented by Dutch startup Van Eco, seems like a normal electric vehicle. It can go from 0-50 kph in 7 seconds, has a 60-90 km range, and its 2000 cycle battery can be fully charged using a standard 220V outlet in under 4 hours. Less common is a body made of hemp and flax fibers that have been impregnated with a biologically derived resin. Despite its unusual exterior, it's safe to ride and robust enough to survive life in the city, all while maintaining plenty of environmental street cred. This unusual manufacturing material cuts the carbon footprint of the already green vehicle while helping eliminate some of the 50-odd parts that have to be snapped, welded, or screwed together in traditional scooters. In a nutshell, there is a two-part shell, batteries, two wheels and some glue, says Simon Akaya, principal at Warmakers, the design firm that developed the BE's signature style. The structural approach is called monocoque, and the outer surface acts as the shell and supporting structure simultaneously. This is a common technique for fabricating Formula One supercars, but it's new to small-scale commuter vehicles. It's a design that proves that supporting structures in high-impact transportation products, commonly made from steel, can actually be replaced by sustainable natural fibers without losing strength or performance, says Martin Heijoltz, another Warmakers employee. Aside from a few screws, bolts, and suspension fixtures, no metal parts had to be used for structural purposes. The BE scooter utilizes cutting-edge manufacturing techniques, but the handmade saddle and old-school headlamp give the scooter a retro feel, an intentional choice by the designers. We believe that some anchor of past shapes and images can be helpful whenever radically new designs are introduced, says Akaya. You're tapping into collective subconsciousness and associating the shapes and forms with known images, thus attributing meaning. The environmental benefits of the BE go beyond the body. Van Eco founder Van Colen Brander developed the scooter to test cradle-to-cradle sustainability concepts, including how distribution alters the environmental impact. BE scooters won't be sold, but instead rented on a weekly or monthly basis by customers Van Eco dubs BE Keepers. These beekeepers will be able to rent their bikes using an Airbnb-style website to wannabes. The hope is that just as honeybees pollinate crops, urban commuters will spread the word about the brand by riding and renting their bikes. We are introducing a new form of mobility, taking the risk of ownership away from the end customer, says Colin Brander. The end user is not just a customer anymore, he/she becomes its own little scooter renting business. The sharing concept makes the scooter available to everyone at a low cost, but because Van Eco owns the fleet, no one has to worry about purchasing a lemon. If the product fails to perform, it's our problem, not our customers, says Colin Brander. The ownership model also allows Van Eco to refurbish used models. The company hopes to someday provide the highest raw material efficiency per driven kilometer in the world. Pilot programs will start in Amsterdam at the beginning of 2014, and Colin Brander hopes to use the BE to pollinate his environmental mission in other European countries as quickly as possible.
Article number 4, Group Plans First Hemp Fest. Take it away.
Group Plans First Hemp Fest by Trey Muse. Source, Austin Daily Herald. Organizer says September event will be family-friendly, drug-free. A local marijuana and hemp advocate is ramping up her push for legalization. Deanna Jean and area organizers plan to put on a festival promoting the legalization of the hemp industry in mid-September. The Austin, Minnesota Hemp Fest is billed as a drug-free, family-friendly event featuring at least 5 musical acts by local and regional artists, according to Jean. Prohibition is ending, and it's time we embrace this change instead of fight it, Jean said. The festival will include arts and crafts opportunities, and speakers to talk about potential benefits from restarting the hemp industry. Yet the event is raising eyebrows within the city. Jean and other organizers will rent the Banshell at Banshell Community Park for the event, which will take place from noon to 9 p.m. September 15. While the issue won't come before the Austin City Council, city officials are closely watching the event to make sure organizers don't promote marijuana legalization. It would be a major surprise if either the council or myself came out in favor of it, said Mayor Tom Steem. Jean has recently ramped up her advocacy, as she gathered more than 1,000 signatures to persuade Steem to publicly support decriminalizing marijuana. Jean believes getting mayors from larger cities in Minnesota on board with decriminalization will lead to the state considering less restrictive medical marijuana and drug enforcement laws. Steem declined to give his position on marijuana legalization. It's not a city issue, it's a state issue, he said. It's not my job as mayor to bring up an issue that we're going to have no bearing on anyway and divide Austin over it. Minnesota was one of the last states to outlaw hemp as an industry in 1968, though legislators have discussed lifting those restrictions over the years. Republican Phyllis Kahn, DFL Minneapolis, continually proposes bills to regulate hemp as an agricultural industry. Though the bill usually receives some bipartisan support, Republican Gene Pop and Senator Dane Sparks, both DFL Austin, have co-sponsored versions of the bill as recently as the last legislative session. Legislators typically never deal with the issue. Marijuana decriminalization is gaining prominence as state and federal officials debate whether to allow states like Washington and Colorado to legally monitor the industry. In Minnesota, a bipartisan group of legislators could once more propose medical marijuana laws at the next legislative session. State representatives and senators passed a medical marijuana bill in 2009, but the initiative was vetoed by then-Governor Tim Pawlenty. Local organizers like Gene have lobbied for such laws over the past few years. Gene, who refuses to give her last name for fear her family could face repercussions, has publicly crusaded for medical marijuana in Minnesota over the past few years, as she credits marijuana with helping her overcome a brain injury and subsequent surgery in 2009. Gene has dealt with backlash from her advocacy, however. She said she lost her job in 2011 because of her outspoken stance. She said she was removed from the Austin area farmers market this summer after trying to advocate during farmers markets and on the market's Facebook page. "We don't allow advocacy of any kind at the market," said Carl Milleran, farmers market treasurer, a couple weeks ago. City officials will closely watch the event to make sure it follows city policy. While the city will allow organizers to use city property for a large festival, some city officials are nervous the event will be used to promote marijuana legalization. "I spent 30 years in law enforcement," Steem said. "There's worse things than marijuana, but there's worse things than cyanide, too. That doesn't make it good." Gene said she is organizing a marijuana advocacy event to come later.
Article number 5. DEA continues crackdown on medical marijuana dispensaries. Were the recent raids in Washington a sign of an escalating federal campaign against state-sanctioned weed? Take it away.
DEA continues crackdown on medical marijuana dispensaries. Were the recent raids in Washington a sign of an escalating federal campaign against state-sanctioned weed? By Matthew Fleischer. Source, TakePart.com. Last week, federal agents with the Drug Enforcement Administration raided a series of medical marijuana dispensaries in Washington state. Marijuana and employees' cell phones were apparently the intended targets of the raid. Surprisingly, for an agency that makes money from drug money seizures, marijuana money was largely ignored. At one dispensary in Olympia, agents left $1,000 in cash untouched, as well as the store's computers. A spokesperson for the DEA told the Associated Press that the raids were part of a 2-year investigation. That the DEA should be launching any prolonged and costly investigations into state-sanctioned marijuana operations should be cause for outrage and alarm. That said, these most recent raids in Washington may not turn out to be as bad as they appear. Messenfert, director of communications for the Marijuana Policy Project, told TakePart last May that the feds were targeting dispensaries and growing operations whose product was being sold across state lines. "They have pursued cases in which they believe medical marijuana was being diverted out of state, and they sent letters to 57 medical marijuana businesses informing them they were within 1,000 feet of a school and needed to relocate or shut down," said Vert. Whether or not Vert's take on previous raids holds true with the recent Washington DEA actions remains unclear. The agency hasn't commented on the nature of the raids, nor why these particular dispensaries were targeted. What is clear is that several of these dispensaries had already been on the Fed's radar for some time, and were raided previously in 2011. No convictions were ever secured, however. Could the Feds be scaling up attempts to stifle the burgeoning regulated marijuana industry? Though marijuana activists like Vert have publicly downplayed some of the recent raids on dispensaries as a limited, targeted action rather than a sign of a blanket crackdown, it is impossible to dismiss the potential chilling effect on the burgeoning industry at large. Which, of course, may be the ultimate goal of these raids, adding state-sanctioned marijuana sellers to shut down voluntarily, thus saving the Obama administration from an embarrassing public relations nightmare. If the DEA is hoping that state-sanctioned marijuana outlets will go away quietly, under the threat of possible draconian federal action, they may be in for a surprise. "We are still open. We may not have meds at the moment, but we are still open," one of the raided dispensaries, Bayside Gardens, wrote on its Facebook page. They will not keep us down. Thank you everyone for all of your support and love. We have no meds, but we still have our dignity and we aren't going anywhere. A day later, according to a Facebook follow-up, the DEA returned and confiscated the dispensary's houseboat.
Article number 6. High Times in Montevideo. Uruguay enters brave new world of pot legalization.
High Times in Montevideo, Uruguay entering brave new world of pot legalization. By Uki Goni. Source, Time World. Freddy gets on his knees and points excitedly at the bright green sprout growing discreetly in the shade under a bench in the middle of Sorrent Street, the exclusive pedestrian walkway lined with art galleries and expensive shops in the old colonial sector of Montevideo. "That's my baby," he says, smiling broadly behind his dark glasses and crinkly beard at the sight of the tiny marijuana plant raising its fronds between the cobblestones, unnoticed by the hundreds of tourists strolling past. Sitting behind his stall on the downtown tourist walk on a cold southern hemispheric winter's day, Freddy sells ornate cannabis pipes that he carves out of swordfish bone and wood to passers-by. "I like to grow my own marijuana for my own use, but when the police catch me with it I have to lie and say it dropped into my hands from a palm tree," he says, laughing. Soon, Freddy and all other marijuana smokers in Uruguay won't have to lie or hide any longer. Uruguay is about to become the first country in the world to fully legalize the production and sale of marijuana, after a decade-long grassroots movement headed by mostly middle-class consumers finally won the day in what is an atypically liberal South American nation. The movement started with people like myself who preferred to grow our own instead of exposing ourselves to the danger of buying from drug dealers, says 46-year-old Juan Vaz, head of AECU, the Uruguayan Cannabis Studies Association, the NGO that has battled the longest for a law legalizing marijuana production, which was approved by the country's lower house of Congress last week. Although private consumption of drugs of any kind, including heroin and cocaine, was never banned by law in Uruguay, the production and sale of marijuana was prohibited, as Vaz painfully discovered one afternoon in 2007 when 8 armed drug squad troopers kicked down the door at his home. "We were watching television with my wife and 3 kids, and they crashed in screaming at us to get down on the floor or they would shoot, like a SWAT team in the movies." After a year in jail because of the 5 plants found in his home, Vaz emerged determined to see the law changed in Uruguay, and went from being a computer programmer to a near full-time marijuana activist. After countless marches and open-air concerts by Uruguayan reggae bands, the liberal government of Uruguayan President José Mujica finally embraced the cause of Vaz and other marijuana advocates last year. Although 78-year-old Mujica claims to have never smoked marijuana, he has said he is convinced legalization is the only solution in a continent that is ravaged by drug-related violence from the narcos, as the drug barons are colloquially called in Spanish. "I'm scared by the drug trafficking, not by the drug," Mujica told the BBC in an interview when he presented the bill for legalization last November. Mujica's draft bill was changed considerably in Congress. Although it originally proposed that marijuana might be produced by the Uruguayan state, the approved version creates a government institution that will grant licenses to private growers whose production will be sold only through pharmacies to registered users. The government will control the whole chain of production, with quality and price controls from the grower to the pharmacies, says Sebasti Sabini, the young congressman who drafted the final bill. The law will go into force once it is approved by the Senate in the next couple of months, says Sabini, whose office at Congress is adorned with a large poster of the revolutionary Che Guevara. Mujica's broad front party enjoys a comfortable majority in the Senate, and the bill is expected to fly through without any major changes. Although liberal drug laws tend to be associated more with certain countries in Europe or parts of North America, it is actually tiny Uruguay, with its population of 3.3 million, wedged between the 2 South American giants of Brazil and Argentina, which has long been ahead of the curve regarding the recreational use of drugs. "Uruguay has done it quietly," says Hannah Hetzer, the representative in Uruguay for the Drug Policy Alliance, a U.S.-based drug reform organization that counts billionaires such as George Soros and Richard Branson and celebrities like Sting on its board of directors. "It has to do with Uruguayans being so traditionally liberal in a country with a wide separation of church and state," says Hetzer. Uruguay officially changed the name of Christmas to Family Day and Easter Week to Tourism Week almost 100 years ago. Unlike other South American nations, Uruguay has been a pioneer in women's rights, divorce, abortion and same-sex marriage laws, so this new law regarding marijuana has to be seen as a continuation of that liberal tradition. Marijuana use is notably widespread in the capital city of Montevideo. To see kids smoking in the park doesn't raise any eyebrows here, says Marco Moscardi, a 35-year-old language school manager. Despite this, support for the bill has been lukewarm from the public at large, with polls showing 63% against the reform. I voted against the law, says Congressman Javier Garc, who feels that Uruguay is being used as a testing ground by first-world NGOs like the Drug Policy Alliance. It raises the risk of drug tourism, and consumption is already legal, so what's the basis for it? A great deal of negotiation and a massive media campaign, with television ads funded partly by Soros Open Society Foundation's group, were required to convince opponents of legalization. The final package includes stiffer penalties for unauthorized sales, especially to minors, a ban on advertising for marijuana products and a ban against smoking in public places, as well as a sales tax for the prevention of the use of harder drugs like cocaine paste, which is a growing problem in Uruguay. Expectations are nonetheless mixed. Some of the details of the new law are not to everyone's liking, especially the monopoly granted to pharmacies and the requirement to register with a government database to buy marijuana. I'm not going to sign up my name anywhere, Freddy complains at his stall on Sorrent Street. Go buy at a pharmacy? No way. But the head of AECU is more optimistic. When consumers realize that they can get better quality marijuana for a lower price at a pharmacy, they're going to sign up despite their qualms, says Vaz. In any case, the law also permits consumers to grow their own up to 6 plants at home. The important thing is it takes the drug traffickers out of the equation, and that can be nothing other than a really good thing.
All right, that's all I have for this week. Until next week, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your minds. Now, go pollinate the world's.